Well, good morning and welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. It's good to have you here with us. Even though you are technically not here with us, we think that you are with us regardless because you've tuned in and we're grateful for that. I'm here with Josh and not with Adam today. We are here with Melissa, our children's minister here at the church. Melissa's joining us for the first time here on the podcast, and we're really excited about that this morning. Melissa, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. I'm so excited to be here. I've been a long-time listener of Corinth in Your Car.
Long time. Since we started.
You're the ground floor, right?
Yeah.
Grassroots movement.
Uh-huh.
There you go. Cool. Hey, Melissa, since you're joining us for the first time and since you really have just been around Corinth for a little over a year, many of our listeners might know your face and might know a little bit about you, but let's kind of give them a chance to get to know you a little bit more before we begin our conversations today. Give us kind of like a 60-second rundown. If people need to know who Melissa is, what are some things they need to know?
All right. Well, like I said, my name is Melissa. I'm originally from Iowa. My immediate family all still lives in Iowa. I graduated from Ozark Christian College. Y'all ever heard of that? I don't know.
We've mentioned it
okay. Briefly.
Okay. Yeah. So I graduated in 2020 and a great time to graduate. Since then, I've been...
The sarcasm was thick.
Yeah. Since then, I worked in Colorado for a little bit doing children's ministry out there. And now I'm here in Georgia, just working at an amazing place, working at an amazing church. A little more about me. I'm a homebody. I like to be home watching TV and movies and things like that, hanging out with the dogs and with Mr. Jim and Miss Jane, who I get to live with right now. They are super fun. I'm also a big college football fan. So if it's a Saturday, you'll kind of see me sitting on the couch for about 8 hours, switching between the different college football games.
There you go. And I think we'll talk a little bit about your fandom of college football here in a minute.
Not enough time in the podcast
for that for Melissa.
Only an hour today. Yeah.
But regardless, Melissa, we are glad that you have joined us today. And thanks for giving us a little bit more of your story and background. We are grateful that you are here at Corinth. We think you're doing a great job, and we're excited to hear what you have to say today. Let's jump into a little bit of a recap from this last week on a personal note. So just give us, Josh, Melissa, a highlight from this last week.
Highlight from the week. For me, you know, in the past couple weeks, we've had quite a few kind of weekend things, or in past episodes, I guess I've talked about my mom visiting, my grandma visiting, things like that. So the calendar has just seemed fuller. And next week, it's going to be full again because my family is coming from Arizona. So this week, a highlight is what I'm getting at is just Saturday was pretty open and we just got to hang out slowly as a family. So that was a highlight for sure.
Cool. Good. What'd you guys do?
Well, waking up slow. Just playing in the yard,
yeah.
Going to the park. Dominic he's really been wanting to swing a bat.
Okay.
And he broke the bat that we had. It was just a plastic, like a wiffle ball bat, you know. And so the other day we borrowed our neighbor's metal bat, like a little T-ball kid's metal bat.
Yeah.
And he was hitting those tennis balls so far through the neighbor's yard. And anyway, it was a lot of fun.
Was Zeke chasing them, your dog?
No, we had to leave Zeke inside because he definitely would have chased that. And a regular-sized tennis ball for the 150-pound Mastiff that is Zeke lasts about 10 minutes before he chews a hole in it.
Yep.
So we actually literally have to go to Tractor Supply and get – you pay like $5 for one giant tennis ball. But it's – I don't know. It's –
It's the size of a globe that
I'm
you
showing
find
you.
In
yeah. I'm showing you in the yeah. studio here, but yeah, you can't see it, you listeners. But it's a giant tennis ball, the only one that works for him. So
yeah, there you go. So there's some information that has not been shared on the podcast yet. Is that in the Moore household lives a lion?
Basically, and he and I weigh about the same amount. Yeah.
So that is a giant dog. I laugh because I watch your tiny kids. Roughhouse with them sometimes. It's quite funny to watch.
I'll try to boss him around. Sit.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not listening to you.
Yeah, basically.
Melissa, what about you? What's been a highlight from your week?
Yeah, so I a couple weeks ago, got to go to an Atlanta Gladiators game, I believe is that what it's called, with Jamie and Becky Gowans, a hockey game. I've never gotten to see it played in person. I'd watched a little bit of it on TV. I live with a couple of Bruins fans, so we got to watch some of that last year. But I got to go in person, and it was so much fun. So much fun. And yeah, since then, just kind of been hanging out at home. Like I said, I enjoy getting to watch some college football on Saturdays. So there's always lots of good games to choose from.
There you go.
So I love live hockey. I've only been to one.
Live hockey is one of the most fun sports to watch.
Yeah. Was there action? Was there like?
Yeah, there was there was a fight. Well, and where we were sitting was right behind one of the. Is it called the goal in hockey? I don't know. I'm still learning. Yeah.
Yes,
terms.
It's called the goal.
Okay. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know. But. We got to sit right behind one of the goals, so we got to see a lot of the action behind there and kind of around there.
That's awesome.
They won like 5-0, so that was fun, too.
Oh, yeah.
They
hometown
really,
win. That's
really
always better.
Crushed them, and we got to see also a fight break out on the other side of the ice. But
nice.
That's what you go to hockey for, right?
So you want to see the fights.
It was a lot of fun.
That's good. Cool. Very good. It's been a good week for me. Most of the time has just been preparing for what's coming. Which is a trip down to San Antonio to visit my family and to celebrate my wife and I's first anniversary, 1 year of marriage.
Woo!
And so happy anniversary. Excited about that. I am pumped that she hasn't come to her senses yet.
You're now a marriage expert, right? 1 year in?
1 year in. Yeah.
Give all the
and
advice.
Yes. So I'm actually going to start a brand new podcast called Marriage Advice from the Newlywed. And we'll – just kidding. That's not going to happen because I need to be listening to you guys because I am still trying to figure it out. But I love my wife, and we're excited about 1 year together. And excited about going to see family. So this last week has been a lot of just prep for being out for a week. Hey, here's what Melissa is excited about. I don't know if we recognize this, but it has gone by super quick. We are already halfway through football seasons. So
yeah,
like
NFL,
NFL's halfway. College is a little bit.
College is over halfway, right?
Over halfway.
It's definitely over halfway. Yeah. And so. I thought it'd be fun, since we've got Melissa, and she loves college football, to spend some time talking football again. We did that at the beginning of the football seasons, but let's kind of check in. How is or are your teams doing right now, Josh and Melissa?
So San Francisco 49ers, they are 4-4, so right at 50%.
You sounds know. Like a bag you order at Wendy's, that record.
Four for four 49ers, yeah. So, no, that's funny. No, they're doing about as expected. They always seem to have some injuries and kind of have what you have at quarterback. So, Garoppolo is a good game manager. He's not going to do anything super spectacular like Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
I mean, that's just the facts.
But Jimmy Garoppolo is not a bad quarterback.
He's not, and we'll see what the last half of the season is like. You know, they brought in Christian McCaffrey, and that was just a fun addition to watch. He really was explosive, and hopefully the offense could, be exciting. And the defense, I think, is healthy after the bye week. So we'll see. Yeah,
cool.
We'll see.
Yeah. Melissa, I know you're not going to go the NFL route.
I was going to say, cut to me not saying a word while you were talking about NFL.
There you go.
I have no idea what you're talking. I have some idea of some people in the NFL, but not a whole lot. I'm an Iowa fan. I'm from Iowa originally, so Iowa Hawkeyes. It has been a roller coaster of a season, and I will try to be as gracious as possible when I talk about. Our defense is always known for being an outstanding defense. And so they've been playing really well, but our offense has been rocky. Okay. Last couple of weeks, they've been able to get some stuff going, especially with the run game. That's kind of what Iowa's known for. They're not known for outstanding, passers. But what's been hard to watch is the quarterback who has started for now 3 seasons being so terrible, just passing and so many interceptions that aren't even like questionable interceptions, like right to defenders interceptions.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
They've gotten it figured out the last couple weeks. We'll see what happens here at the end of the season.
Do you predict they'll make a bowl game?
I hope so.
You hope so.
What's their record right now?
Right now they are, I believe, 5-4. So we're one game.
Well,
we're one game away.
Bowl game is reachable.
It's reachable.
How many games left?
We have 3 games left, 2 games left.
So if you win out, It's possible.
Yeah. So I think so with Iowa, you always got to be realistic. We're never going to be, you know, get the top recruits for people. We're not an SEC powerhouse. Mm-hmm. We're so, you know, if my kind of bare minimum is like, if we can beat Nebraska at the end of the season, I will be happy. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But it's been rough. And also, you know, our offensive coordinator is not been stellar. He's been calling a lot of plays that just are so pointless in like third down red zone situations. We get to the red zone so often and then cannot finish. Our offensive line's still very young, lots of freshmen and sophomores. So we'll call it a rebuilding year, but
call it a rebuilding year.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't.
Well, I'll transition into my team, because when you use the word rebuilding, it feels like the Texas Longhorns are in a rebuilding decade. And that has been really tough. Now,
was Colt McCoy the last?
Colt McCoy, yeah. 2010. Uh-huh. Colt McCoy, championship game, injured by Alabama. And Alabama goes on to win the national championship. And the next time we played Alabama was this very year. And Quinn Ewers, our quarterback, who is really a great quarterback.
Outstanding.
Also injured by Alabama. And we ended up losing that game. And so one day we will play Alabama and they won't injure our star quarterback and we'll actually be able to beat them, which would have happened both in 2010 and this year. But I'm not at all salty about it. Texas has been better this year, which my prediction before the year started is that we would be at least one game better. So far we're on track. We still have three very disappointing L's, but the big win is that we pounded Oklahoma 49-0, which is
yeah, there you go.
So that's a big win. So excited about that. Chiefs are doing super well. Really, really excited about that. Now, I do have to, just as we're talking college football, I have to make some apologies, because, you know, 8 weeks or whatever, whenever Adam and Josh and I talked about football, I made three predictions. One of them is on track to be correct, and it's about Texas, which none of you care about, and that's okay. But the other two were this. I predicted that Georgia would end the season with two losses, and I also predicted that Alabama would win the national championship. I am very wrong as of right now.
I mean, the season's not over yet.
The season is not over yet.
Georgia is not the team with two losses.
Bama has two losses and might not even make the SEC championship game.
Correct.
And Georgia just pounced Tennessee, which has been getting a lot of hype.
Uh-huh.
So... to all of you,
go Dogs, right?
All of you Georgia fans who were offended by what I said, I eat my words. I repent. I am sorry. And go Dogs. Well done.
There you
Congratulations
go.
For having a very, very good football team. They're a fun team to watch. Let's kind of move on from football. We could talk about that all day, but that's not the most important thing we're going to talk about. College football happens on Saturdays. And Melissa, you talk about how you like to spend a lot of time watching college football. I think a lot of us do. I like to as well. Saturdays is also the traditional day of Sabbath for the nation of Israel. And that's what we talked about yesterday, which was Sabbath or rest. And how's that for a transition?
What a transition.
How's that for a transition? We're going to jump into the sermon. Adam is not here with us today to give us a recap. And so here's just a quick rundown of what was talked about yesterday. We're in our series, Becoming Unhurried, talking about how the pace of our life might not be the best for us to experience the presence and grace of God moment by moment. And so we're talking about some things that we can do to maybe slow our pace down a little bit to become unhurried. And so yesterday, Adam jumped into some teaching about Sabbath, which is this idea that God had given the nation of Israel, his very own people. You're going to work 6 days and you're going to rest on the seventh. And so Adam talked about Sabbath in the Bible and then gave some practical advice for us taking a Sabbath of our own, which we don't really do. But we're going to talk through Sabbath quite a bit today. Want to ask Josh and Melissa, just as you think back to what was said, what are some things that stood out to you? What might have been particularly helpful? What might have been particularly challenging? Talk to us a little bit about that.
One line that really kind of challenged me said, "We rest in Him because we trust in Him." And so, I mean, I guess we're going to get to the outline soon and talk the specifics of Sabbath is imitation, an act of refusal, an act of faith. But really, I started thinking about that word trust. You know, when you talk about imitating God or refusing to do things the world's way or placing faith in God, it is all about trust. Yeah. And so we rest in Him because we trust in Him. If we're not resting the way He's kind of asked us to, it's maybe a little bit of an exposure. Like, are we trusting Him? Like, we've been called to trust Him. And I think that maybe Americans in particular are quick to grab the, well, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And yeah. So we just kind of go completely on the other side of the pendulum with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just say, well, I can, you know, I am doing good on the Sabbath because I'm doing this and this and this and this and this. And then we're continued to be worn out and busy. So
right.
Anyway, that's my thought. We rest in Him because we trust in Him.
Yeah, I think you use the word trust. I mean, anytime you establish a relationship of any kind with trust, then trust becomes the foundation for doing what you've been asked to do, right? Like, mm-hmm. So if you trust someone, then you're going to do the things that they expect of you or that they are blessing you with, right? And mm-hmm. So God has done this. If we trust Him, He's blessing us with this and expecting this of us so that we can slow down and live a unhurried life. If we don't do it, it might expose some trust issues. That's a mm-hmm. that's a very good point there, Josh. Melissa, what do you think was helpful, challenging, what stood out from you for you yesterday?
Yeah, I think yesterday, it's always just a good reminder to me about Sabbath because it's, I think kind of like Josh was saying, as you know, Christians today are like, well, we don't follow the Old Testament law, like all this in the Old Testament law anymore. And so instead, like, we're just going to swing so far the other way because we don't have to follow this Sabbath rule anymore. And just kind of the reminder of how integral it was to the Jewish people then and still today for those people who are Jewish today. And I think overall the idea, and we'll jump into it more later, but just like how our worth and our value is not tied to what we do. It's tied to who we are mm-hmm. and yeah. how God designed that like Sabbath to be a reminder of that, especially for those Israelites who were, you know, working in Egypt as slaves for so many years. It just, that is such an important reminder for me to have.
And there certainly were Old Testament laws that Jesus came and did away with or updated because, you know, sacrifices and such like that were not needed anymore.
Right.
He never did anything to nullify the importance of the Sabbath.
Absolutely.
And it's not so much a rule as a gift.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because you see Jesus, you interact with the New Testament, the gospel narrative, and you see that a lot of what the religious leaders had problems with Jesus for doing was for doing something on the Sabbath, right? So
sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Your disciples are picking food to eat on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
And I cannot believe that you would do that. You must be a terrible dude. Or I cannot believe that you healed somebody on the Sabbath day and that you asked him to pick up his mat and carry it. Like,
how dare you?
Goodness. And so it's not necessarily, you know, you get to the New Testament and you get to this point and wherever you're reading about Sabbath, and it might become a little bit confusing because of what the religious leaders had made it out to be. God originally says, I want you to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. So it's a day that's set apart for you as a gift to rest. And whether with good intentions or with bad intentions, what that eventually became for the religious leaders of Israel was, we are going to make other rules about the Sabbath in order to protect what God's original intention was. And so those extra additional rules actually became problems. And so Jesus comes on the scene. He's like, no, you've kind of built out around the Sabbath and you're missing the point. And that's whenever he says, like, the Sabbath was not made for man. What the exact phrase is, not made for
man.
Well,
the Sabbath.
Sabbath was made for man.
Yeah.
Not
man for
the
Sabbath.
And
so I think what we miss is that Jesus actually said the Sabbath was made for man.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's
mankind.
A gift.
Like, so use it. Step into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. As Adam taught through Sabbath, or we could say Shabbat, which mm-hmm. is the way to actually say it, yesterday, he defined it with three different phrases. And what I want to do is, just as we kind of dive deeper into the message yesterday, is I want to take a look at each of these phrases and then ask some questions just for you guys to kind of expand a little bit with some extra thoughts. So the first one, Sabbath is an act of imitation. As you kind of think through what Adam taught yesterday and that phrase, Sabbath is an act of imitation, what's important about that for God's people? What's important about that for you?
I'll go. You know, one thing he said yesterday, active imitation, referenced Deuteronomy 5:15. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. But really, that was rooted, the scriptures and Sabbath was actually rooted all the way back in creation. And so God stopped. And so that word Shabbat that you said, it literally just means stop.
Yeah.
Or delight is another way you can translate it. And I forget where I heard this, but it really is, it's a part of the grain of the universe. There's 6 days on, 1 day off. Even God himself did that. And so I forget where I heard this, but they said, when you go against the grain of the universe, you're going to get splinters. You know, like,
it's good.
Yeah.
Like, this was God's gift. It was his, he stopped and he delighted. And so part of our imitation is doing what he did, even though he didn't technically, you know, air quotes, need a rest. He stopped and delighted.
Yeah.
So how am I imitating that?
That's good.
Yeah. What comes to mind for me too is the idea of, I think this was something one of our professors said, like my freshman year of college. It was a sermon. We were talking about how God is the I am, and that means I am not. Like, my name is I am not.
Yeah.
And so just the reminder that, like, he's in control, and he, like you said, he didn't have to rest. Jesus didn't need to rest, and there's many times throughout the New Testament where we see him, you know, taking that time to rest.
Dude was taking a nap on the boat in the middle of a storm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a heavy sleeper, man. Deep sleeper. But yeah.
Sasha has a keychain that says, Jesus took naps, and it has the reference to that. So, like, naps are a good thing. Yeah.
So I just, just always a reminder of, like, we're trying to become more like Jesus and transform into who he is. And so I talk a lot about that with kids when we're talking about baptism and the idea that, like, Jesus got baptized. So, like, if Jesus did it, we should probably too. And so it sounds, I think maybe I'm making it more simple than it is, but just the idea, like, Jesus did it, so I guess that's probably what I should do too.
I don't think it's more simple, because part of the overarching theme of this series is how to be an apprentice, a follower, a disciple, whatever, of Jesus,
right?
Is do what he did.
Yep.
And what would he do if he were you? Well, he would Sabbath.
Which, what would he do if he were you, is basically just a rebranding of the late
WWJD.
Oh, man. Pull out the
bracelets. So let's get those back out. I love just the idea of Sabbath going all the way back to creation.
Mm-hmm.
And what has always been really just interesting and encouraging to me is that you see God spends 6 days working. And so he creates for 6 days. On the sixth day, he creates mankind.
Mm-hmm.
On the seventh day, he rests. So one thing that you can kind of understand about the creation narrative when it comes to mankind is that we were created like with the intention to work. So like one of the commands that God gave Adam very early was like, you're going to take care of this place. You're going to work. I created you so that you could work.
Yep.
But that was not the very first thing that Adam did.
Right. The first day for
Adam and Eve was the day of rest. And so they actually entered into God's Sabbath, God's rest, and then they worked from there. And so I think that sometimes we just get this backwards, and because of our American culture, we're thinking we've got to work first, and then as a reward or as a break from our work, then we're going to rest and recover.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily the gift of the Sabbath. The gift of the Sabbath is, no, we're going to rest first, and from our rest, then we're going to honor God and glorify God by the work that he's placed in front of us. And so, like, you even take that all the way to the gospel narrative and think about what Jesus has done. Jesus's work accomplished our salvation or our rest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that we work and enter that rest. It's that when we cry out in faith, we actually enter into that rest first. And so I think just as a Sabbath in general, kind of in the creation narrative, that's what I learned. That's what sticks out, is that it's rest first and then work, not work and then.
Yeah. And it's a healthier rhythm to think, I'm going to get my, you know, cup filled up first with delighting and worshiping in God, and I'm going to then serve my family and the people in my care from the fullness that I have.
It's God's perfect design. It's not an outcome of, you know, the fall. Like, I think that's a good reminder too, that it's like,
that's true.
It's not just something God added in later as like, you know, a way to help you. It's like God's perfect design is Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Rest.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Even before sin.
The Sabbath was not a gift after the fall of mankind. The Sabbath is a gift before. That's a good point there, Melissa. Love that. Let's jump into the second point. Adam, as he's teaching through Sabbath, first said Sabbath is an act of imitation, but then said Sabbath is an act of refusal. So let's talk about that phrase and what was talked about yesterday. What's important about that for God's people? For you, kind of the same question, and let's jump in there.
So just looking at the notes here, Adam said Sabbath is a refusal to revive what God removed. And so essentially the nation of Israel is wanting to go back to Egypt. And so if you know the Old Testament story, or if you don't know the Old Testament story, after they're released from, you know, 400 plus years of slavery, they're not gone that long before they actually say, "Hey, Moses, we want to go back." And in their minds, they're imagining like, yeah, slavery was somehow better than God's freedom. And it's ridiculous on the outside looking in. But if I'm honest and evaluate my life, I mean, when do I say, "Well, God, I want to go back to my busy life," instead of your plan? And so it's an act of refusal to culture, but sometimes it's an act of refusal just to your own natural tendencies.
Yeah,
I know for me, I'm a type A, like, want to get stuff done and check it off the to-do list. Those days bring me delight when I get to check, 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 check. And so sometimes, you know, if I'm not careful, I can attach value and meaning to the number of things I check off of a list. And so that's probably the biggest temptation in Sabbath for me, is when I'm supposed to be resting and delighting. If I'm in the house and I look around and, oh, I can do that or arrange that or pick that up. Or if I'm at work, I can knock this off, or I wouldn't be at work on the Sabbath, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just getting distracted with to-do lists that honestly can wait. They're not urgent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
good. Melissa, what are some thoughts about this? Sabbath is an act of refusal.
Yeah, I think that it comes back to that line about, you know, that the Israelites' worth and value wasn't dependent on the work that they were doing. Like, you know, the Egyptians put value, not a lot of value, but some value on them for the work that they did and all the things that they created for them. And so God is just executing this as a reminder that, like, you're free. So, like, don't work under that same identity anymore of that you are still slaves in Egypt. And so just like Josh was saying, I kind of pride myself in being a hard worker and like executing things really well and just working hard. So just the idea of stopping and a reminder that, like, hey, my value, my identity is not in if I cross everything off my list today, or, you know, if I actually, you know, work an extra day because I feel like I need to, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where those like healthy work boundaries come in, because especially for us who work at the church and everybody in general, like, our jobs are so important. It's our livelihood for us here at the church. It's connected to our spirituality, and just like all the things that we're doing are good things. And so it's so hard. It's a hard place to get to of like, no, I can stop for a day, even though all the things that I could be doing are like good things that mm-hmm. would help, you know, mm-hmm. people at the church, or for our listeners who are, you know, it's your livelihood. It's how you, you know, spend time with your family, whatever it means, you know. And so I think just it was a good reminder of that.
Yeah, I think that's good. Adam talks about how Sabbath is an act of refusal to really go back to the way that things were before you, I'll just say, knew Jesus in this context, in New Testament world instead of Old Testament world. But I also think that I'll take it like a little bit of a step further. I think Sabbath as an act of refusal is also just a way of saying, when I practice the Sabbath, I am refusing to look like the world looks.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So this idea of just our American culture of gotta go get it, gotta go get it, gotta go get it, gotta go get it, sometimes is just a grind that was not ever helpful or healthy for us. And so you've got this idea of that's the way the world looks, but if we're Kingdom of God people, we're supposed to look a little bit different than the way the world looks, and that's a good thing. And so Sabbath is actually a part of that, where we can maybe even, I'll use the Sabbath word, set ourselves apart to become holy and taking that rest. And whenever you take that day of rest, it actually positions you. So this is really, really cheesy, all that sort of stuff. But Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays.
Yeah.
24-hour period where they do nothing. And they're like the best fast food restaurant in the world. They look a little bit different than all of the other fast food restaurants, but they are able still to accomplish more. And I think that there's something to that just on a practical level. Is like we understand when we rest first in the gift that God has given us and then work from that, not only are you experiencing a more unhurried life, but you actually probably will experience better results in the long run. So Sabbath is a gift for us that positions us to be more successful as well.
Yeah. There's actually a study in the book. It's funny you talk about results, where a group of Christians that faithfully practiced the Sabbath were shown to live about 10 years, I think it was 10 years longer than the average. And John Mark Comer did the math, and he's like, yep, that comes down to one Sabbath a week.
Yeah.
And so it's basically like, well, when do you want your life? Do you want 10 more years with your kids and grandkids? Do you want 10 more years with your family, or do you want to work it all off now and die sooner? I mean,
answer's pretty easy to give.
Right. Like if you want fullness of life,
yeah, right.
The generational impact that you can have is just, it's wonderful, you know? So,
so
not to mention the length of life later, but the fullness of life now, it's right. just an act of,
so,
yeah.
So we could just kind of, market it like this, Sabbath or die, pretty much. Yeah.
Put it on a t-shirt.
Put it on a t-shirt, and there you go. Cool. Sabbath is, next one, Sabbath is an act of faith. Let's jump into that. What's important about that for God's people, for you, kind of thinking through what was talked about yesterday as an act of faith?
This is the one where, you know, Adam said, we rest in him because we trust in him, and that's what stuck out to me. And it's funny, the boat where Jesus fell asleep. You guys brought that up earlier, you know, and Jesus did fall asleep in a boat. And you think, how in the world could he fall asleep in a boat? And I heard this once, it stuck with me. Jesus could fall asleep in the boat because he knew God was on the throne. Mm-hmm. And so there is a level of our faith where, you know, faith is trust that God is going to do what only he can do. He's on the throne. And so when our life is spinning out of control, God's not. He's not worried. Faith is also the sense of, in my mind, I'm practicing faith. I'm worshiping. I'm delighting. I'm stopping. And if I'm not literally stopping, then I am missing a rhythm of practicing faith. So those are a few thoughts that pop into my mind.
Yeah, love that. Melissa, what you got for us?
Yeah, I loved that verse from Psalm 4:8 that you talked about. In peace, I will lie down and sleep, for you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. On like a practical level sometimes, especially when I lived by myself, like just the idea of like being physically safe, like when I would lie down to go to sleep, just that idea of like protection and trust, I think is so important. And so practicing Sabbath and learning how to Sabbath was really important for me in that aspect, because I was like so scared, if I'm being honest, like anxious, seriously, about like my physical safety, but also emotional safety, and just the idea that like God is protecting you. Like God, like you can wake up in the middle of the night and know that like you are safe because God is protecting you. And so like that goes metaphorically as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think too, just Sabbath is a way of kind of pausing, stopping, you know, like you said, Shabbat, the word stop, or delight and all that sort of stuff. I think too, something that happens whenever we actually take rest is that kind of the circumstances of our life get kind of put back into perspective. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whenever we're working throughout the week and it's this grind of got to check things off the to-do list, got to have this conversation, got to make this phone call, oh, this deadline is due and this deadline is about to be due, all that sort of stuff. Whenever we actually pause and begin to rest, when we're tempted to think about all of those things, there are two questions that I think are helpful. And the first question is, does anything about my to-do list change who God is? And the answer to that's no. Mm-hmm. And then you ask the second question, does anything about my to-do list change who God says that I am? And the answer is no.
Right.
And so in Sabbath, you've got this almost moment of worship as you're expressing your faith that says, no matter what is on my plate, I can stop and slow down and rest because I know who God is and I know who he says that I am. And nothing about my circumstances in life are going to change those two things.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So that's just an encouraging aspect of how Sabbath sometimes expresses itself in faith, where you get to take a moment and just worship God because he is so good, mm-hmm. and so gracious and so merciful, and nothing about any of our grind throughout the week changes him.
Well, just mm-hmm. know that things will get done. Like it would all get done. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I remind myself of that, a lot of that too, when I have to stop and rest and just trust God. It's like, I have all these things and I am convinced that if I don't do everything now, like it's not going to get done. But it's like, then 3 days later, I'm like, oh, God worked it all out. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's really easy in that moment, I think, just to, I'll even crack the door open a little bit on me, you know, going out of town next week. And so like the last couple of weeks has been a lot of work, trying to work ahead to make mm-hmm. sure that everything's taken care of and put into place so that, you know, my incredible team of volunteers mm-hmm. are prepared to continue to kill it in ministry. And so, you know, in the last couple of weeks, it's just been a, oh man, I've got to get this done and this done and this done and this done. But then again, like to come back to that question, whether it gets done or not,
mm-hmm.
doesn't change anything about who God is, doesn't change anything about who I am, doesn't change anything about the fact that the ministry of Corinth Teens actually belongs to God and he's going to accomplish what he wants to accomplish regardless of my effort, because he doesn't need me to do it, right? And so there's also, you know, as I'm kind of talking and rambling through that, there's that humility point that Sabbath brings as well.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like the work that you are doing, whether it be ministry work or whether it be business or whether it be sales or whether it be checking people out at the Kroger line, like all of that work is not 100% dependent upon you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sabbath actually becomes this uncomfortable point for us too, is like, oh, maybe by God's grace, I'm more expendable than I thought I was.
Yeah.
By
yeah,
God's grace, that's
really,
the key word.
It's really
like,
true.
By
yeah.
God's grace, I am not as important as I thought that I was, and that is a good thing.
Yeah, some perspective always helps, because the tendency to want to accomplish something and check it off, it's like, man, this has to be done today.
Mm-hmm.
And the urgentness that we often feel, it just puts it in perspective. You know, just recently, I was helping one of my children with some homework. And she was very upset. And of course, I'm much older now, and I can look at her and like, this is third grade math. You're not going to remember this ever.
Yeah.
Ever, right?
Nope. Like, right.
Like not even next week, you're not going to remember it, let alone when you're an adult. And I wonder how often God looks at us. It's like, dude, Josh, that's third grade math. And you're worried about it. Like,
sure.
Stop, rest, just delight in me, because it's what you're worried about or what you think is so important has to get on. It's third grade math.
Yeah. It's a blimp on the radar.
It is.
Yeah, it's just
I think that's a t-shirt as well. A repeatable line. Stop worrying about third grade math. Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
The pointless things that don't matter in the
there
long
you go.
Run,
the
you
third
know?
Graders here at the church are going to be like, stop.
They might agree with me. They're like, yeah.
They probably would, yeah.
We need to be done with third grade math. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I think that's just another good question to ask then too, right? Like what you're saying makes me think about this. As you're checking off things on your to-do list each week and you become stressed or you become frantic because you've got so much to do, stopping and asking the question, well, is this actually going to matter in a year?
Yeah.
Is this going to matter in a month? Is this going to matter even in a week? And mm-hmm. the answer is, you know, more often than not, yeah, probably not.
I think in some ways, I think this circles all the way back to some of the stuff we talked about in Lead Like Jesus, I think is the leadership stuff. And we were talking about the Titan Planner and how just the five for life, and maybe it's not five for you, maybe it's other things, but just those priorities that you want to accomplish every day. What are the most important things? What has God called you to do? And you look at those lists and figure out, man, if I've accomplished those things, those are what is most important. And then the email I have to send or the laundry that needs to get done, those aren't like the biggest priorities. So my success isn't defined by those. So
yeah, that's good. And if you're stressed about the laundry, just wear it again. It's okay.
There will always be laundry.
Yep, it's always. Never ending. God's grace and laundry and road construction. never ending. Hey, let's jump in and get a little bit practical. Before we do, I think we've talked pretty extensively about it, but are there any, I want to give you guys the moment, are there any extra thoughts that you guys have about Sabbath as presented to us yesterday or from Scripture or just anything else that you've got before we jump into practical? If not, we'll go for it.
Jump into practical.
Let's jump into practical.
I'm ready to get
That's
practical.
What we want. Okay. So yesterday, Adam said, practical part of the sermon, you need a day, stop doing what you have to do, and embrace what God or what gives you life. And so those are some like tips for how to practice Sabbath. Generally, we don't Sabbath because either we think that we don't have time or because we don't know how. And so for those of you that might still be listening and you might feel a little bit skeptical about this whole idea of stopping and resting, let's talk a little bit about what might be at stake. Why is Sabbath such an important rhythm for our life?
Yeah, I think one thing he did say in the sermon is just we don't rest because the work is done. We rest because the work is never done. You know, and we remind ourselves of that when we Sabbath. And so what's at stake is somehow this lie of thinking, I will get everything done. I am important enough or powerful enough or strong enough or smart enough to get it all done. And really, you can't. There's always going to be laundry, right? In whatever laundry is for you. There's always a to-do list. There's always something. So it's just, it's time to Sabbath because it's time to Sabbath. And I think of John 10:10, Jesus said, I've come to give you life to the full. And a couple weeks ago, Adam referenced the quote, Carl Jung said, hurry is not of the devil, hurry is the devil.
Yeah.
And if the devil is here to kill, steal, and destroy, of course he's going to twist something as central as Sabbath.
Yeah, so. That's good. Melissa, what do you think is at stake if we don't do this?
Yeah, I think what's at stake is you're just running on empty if you don't Sabbath. Like I remember my senior year of college, my first semester, I was working, I was taking a full credit hours, and I was also doing an internship that I didn't necessarily need. I had already done one for my degree. So I was just running myself ragged, like just running myself into the ground. I was working really hard, and which I thought was kind of like what you were supposed to do until I got about halfway through the semester and was just like having a breakdown because I just could not like keep all the plates spinning. And so I just ran myself into the floor. I had no time to Sabbath. I didn't even kind of really know what, like how to Sabbath. And so I had to take things off my plate that were things that I really enjoyed doing, but I couldn't do anymore. And so I think that what's at stake and why Sabbath is so important is that if you don't, you're running on empty. You are just constantly, you're running a marathon and you have no water left. You are just like, just crawling to the finish line.
Yeah. I think that's good. As we talked about earlier, what also is at stake is 10 years of your life.
Yeah.
So pay attention to that. And then two, just I think whenever you refuse to Sabbath or whenever Sabbath is not a part of your rhythm, what's at stake is that you are not living the life that God created you to live. And anytime that we are not living the life that God created us to live, that's going to leave us feeling a lot of tension. And so, man, step into the gift of Sabbath, the gift of grace that God has given to us, and we're going to talk about how we can do that. So, let's help our listeners and really ourselves imagine what Sabbath could really look like for them. So that's kind of the question: what could Sabbath look like for you know, I don't know, the average Corinthian, the average American. What could it look like for us? Let's help imagine and dream.
I think, you know, you have to figure out kind of your family's rhythm and what would make sense for you. This has been an interesting one for us because obviously Sunday is like a work day for us on staff here. And so we don't Sabbath on Sunday in the same sense that as everyone else could. So I don't know what it would look like for the average Corinthian. Is that what you're kind of getting at, or for us? You know,
sure. I think let's talk generic first,
Yeah.
And then, and just kind of give some ideas, and then we'll talk about our rhythms.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think average Corinthian, you find that 24-hour period where you can, you know, shut the email off, get distance from technology, and try to go 24 hours, you know, and just make a commitment. It is a refusal to your natural tendencies. And so maybe it's a Friday night to Saturday night. Maybe it's a Saturday all day. Maybe it's Sunday because it's the day of worship, you know? And so, don't be so legalistic about it for yourself, but find that 24-hour period.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Melissa, thoughts?
I think practically, just don't overcomplicate it. Like I, for many years thought like, okay, Sabbath is this like 24-hour period where I have to like sit in solitude and pray like read my Bible the whole day and not do anything. And while that's maybe a good portion, like you may want to throw some of that into your Sabbath, like just expanding my view of like Sabbath play and, you know, do things that, I mean, it goes back to do things, but you know, what gives you life? Like Adam was saying yesterday, like it's get to's, not have to's on Sabbath. Yeah, and right. So for your family, what does it look like to just enjoy like being with each other and like resting? But that doesn't necessarily mean like, I'm just going to lay in the dark for a whole day. You know what right. I mean? Like, I think that really helped me get out of my own headspace about Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's good. Really, I'll kind of put this term to it, and I don't know if the analogy fits. I guess no analogy really fits, but Sabbath, think about it as like a 24-hour vacation. Right. So like whenever you take vacation away from work, you take a week, you go to the beach, you don't spend the entire week at the beach in bed doing nothing. You do things with your family. Yeah, I hope not. You do things with your family that are fun and relaxing. You go to the beach, you sit down, you read a book. Or if you're me, you go to the beach and you swim in the ocean because that's what the beach is for. and you do all you go eat a nice seafood meal. You go, you know, have some fun at some of the souvenir stores and all that sort of stuff. You play miniature golf, especially if you're at Myrtle Beach. I think they have 100 mini golf courses there. And so you are enjoying the get-tos of life, the fun things that help you connect with your family, to help you connect with God, all that sort of stuff. And sure, whenever you take Sabbath, absolutely. Maybe add some silence and solitude to it. Absolutely spend some time in God's word. Absolutely pray for the needs of others, all that sort of stuff. That is an incredible moment to take opportunity of more extended time to do that. But you don't have to do that for 24 hours. Mm-hmm, right. Instead, it's really a sacrifice of doing the things that you feel like you have to do, and the gift of not having to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And so just think about your Sabbath as like a 24-hour vacation. What are the things that you can do with your family, the time that you can set aside to do things that actually give you life rather than drain you, because you're already drained 6 days of the week. So you don't need to be drained on the seventh day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk about for us then. So for you, what kind of works for you, for your family? What has this looked like? Maybe even how has it changed for you over the course of years and all that sort of stuff? Talk about Sabbath and you.
Yeah, so for me, I've tried to fall into a rhythm of, because Sasha is working on Fridays and then the kids are at school, kind of Friday around 4, whenever they get back, till Saturday at 4 in the perfect world when we're faithful to it, is kind of, that's the 24-hour period where, you know, we're ordering a pizza, we're making it ourselves and watching a movie and sleeping in and going to the park. Just doing things that give us life. Sometimes if it's just me, things that actually give me life would be like hiking Stone Mountain or going on a run, which don't give everyone life, but they do me.
That sucks the life right out.
There
of
you me. Go.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I was thinking on this. I remember earlier this year, there was a Friday. Sasha was at work. The kids were at school. And I had a day. And so I stayed at home and I read, there's this J.R.R. Tolkien book. It's a short story called Leaf by Niggle. It's kind of a weird name, weird title.
What is a niggle?
It's the name of a guy in his story, okay. Niggle. And it's a fun story. The whole thing is he wanted to paint this perfect tree and perfect leaf and he could never get it. And really it's a story that Tolkien wrote about himself and the Lord of the Rings trilogy and how it's never actually perfect, and even though it's awesome. Anyway, that story aside, what I'm trying to say is it was cold outside. I built a fire in the fireplace and just sat and read a story until I was done with it, you know? And it wasn't like a huge novel. It's a short story. So I wasn't there for hours and hours and hours, but it was a time where my phone was gone. And that's another thing too. If you're looking for practical ways, mm-hmm. you iPhone users, there's something called Focus. And you can actually set something up. And so I set one up that says Sabbath, and it turns my phone screen black. And I don't see any notifications except from my wife, not even my mom. So love you, Mom. But
don't talk to me on the Sabbath.
No, and that's not meant to be like some legalistic rule. It's just if it's an unnecessary
Very
distraction,
helpful.
Then I'm going to get, you know, and I can still check it. I can still, you know, if right. I want to. And sometimes I've even turned my phone off for 24 hours,
right.
which is maybe harder than you think, but very helpful. So I'll quit rambling now. Those are a few ideas that we do, though.
Yeah, I think that's good and helpful. Yeah. Melissa, what does this look like for you?
Yeah, well, for me, it's just me, myself, and I right now. And so I get to kind of have a little more freedom with what I choose. And definitely my relationship with Sabbath has grown. I think that what kind of sparked that was we had to go on a spiritual formation retreat for my degree, that we had to take a plan like a Sabbath day for ourselves. And so I learned a lot of things through that. And now I just, like I said, I do things that give me life. And so Friday morning, you'll probably find me at Coffee Camper. Love a good cup of coffee, specifically cold brew coffee. So good. Mm-hmm. So I'm usually there Friday mornings just reading and just like having a morning to myself. I am very introverted. And what I do, you know, professionally is very extroverted. It's a lot of people. And so I do tend to spend a lot of time by myself on my Sabbath. That just gives me life and recharges me. And so reading books and watching movies. I do like to be outside too, not necessarily hiking. I lived in Colorado for a year and I didn't go on many hikes. but I just like sitting out on the back porch, like just feeling the air, I feel like, or driving in my car and listening to music with mm-hmm. the windows down,
yeah.
Things like that. So that's what Sabbath looks like for me.
Yeah, I think that's good for me. Josh, similar time frame. You know, we both teach CLC. You're yeah. on Fridays every other week. I'm yep. on Fridays every week. Yep. And so kind of the moment that I put the church van back up
yep.
is the moment exactly. that I am done. Mm-hmm. And so from Friday to that point until really for me, if I can, until Sunday morning mm-hmm. is kind of the, I guess, 24, maybe a little bit over 24-hour period where I'm just not going to come into work. I'm not going to open up my laptop and start going away, going to town on some things. And for me, what it looks like is like Friday night is Tristan and I's date night. And so we'll go out and get a nice meal, or we'll stay in and cook a nice meal together, all that sort of stuff. And the, you know, the moments that we get to connect with each other there, it's incredibly life-giving. And then, you know, it's go to bed Saturday. And then it's do the things that give me life. It's the get to. I get to mm-hmm. go play disc golf every Saturday morning. Yeah. And sometimes that looks like driving to Carrollton or mm-hmm. to Atlanta or to Tequila or down the road to, you know, Matthews Park in Monroe or Covington for Parker's Pasture, all that sort of stuff. And so this is a, man, I'm so excited because I get to do this. And then as soon as I'm done, it's a, okay, cool. I'm going to take the rest of the day and I'm going to just do whatever I want, you know, if I want to watch football or if I want to get creative and try to do something with my hands, or if I want to go right now across the street and help my in-laws build a house and mm-hmm. have fun and all that sort of stuff. Like, that is the Sabbath. And it gets to a point where I'll have to confess, I do not approach it with as much intentionality as I probably should. And so I want to get better at that. I want to approach kind of the 24 hours there with a little bit more intentionality, especially in regards to just trying to set aside some time to connect with the Lord as well.
Sure.
Yep. But I think also just I have gotten to to this point to where I have done this rhythm for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And it's almost just like natural. Like it's natural for me, unless there's some sort of weird calendar day where there is something that I've got to do on a Saturday or a Friday night, which is rare, but occasionally happens. But unless that's happening, like it is so natural for me to just stop and then start again on Sunday. And so there's a little bit of an encouragement to you. Again, confession, I don't approach it with as much intentionality as I think I should or I'd like to, but when you do it long enough, it really becomes a part of your natural rhythm. It's easy to set it aside and just to do the things that you enjoy. And so I love that outline from Adam yesterday. It's just like, you need a day, so find that 24 hours. And also, if you're like overwhelmed by 24 hours, also remember that like at least 8 hours of it is supposed to be sleeping. So you only right. have to fill, you don't have to fill 24 hours with all that sort of stuff. You just, you need a day. Find that 24 hours. Is it going to be Saturday night to Sunday? Is it going to be Friday to Saturday? If you've got a different schedule, is it going to be a Tuesday to a Wednesday? Like whatever that 24 hours is, find a day, stop doing the things you have to do and do the things that you get to do. Embrace what gives you life. And part of that embrace of what gives you life is a connection to the Father who has given you life and life to the full. And so take some time to connect with him. Sabbath is important, and we hope you hear our hearts. None of the three of us would ever claim that we get it right, at the same time, the three of us would say we've benefited from practicing this in some form or fashion. And so if you have not, we want to encourage and then maybe even challenge you to do it, which gets us to that point of the challenge. The challenge from yesterday, Adam's sermon, was take a 24-hour Sabbath. So there's the challenge. I don't think that we need any extra thoughts on that because it is a very simple imperative. Take a 24-hour Sabbath, not a 5-hour Sabbath, mm-hmm. a 24-hour Sabbath. And if you feel like you can't do that, you're wrong. Sorry. There you go. You can.
You need to do it. You got to find somewhere.
Yeah, you can find somewhere. And man, I know that you will just be blessed by that the more that you do it with your continued rhythm. So that's the challenge. Is there another challenge or encouragement that you'd like to give kind of on Sabbath before we kind of wrap up and move on to our ending?
There was a book I picked up, I don't know, last year or something, and it's called Sabbath by a guy named Wayne Mueller. Finding rest, renewal, and delight in our busy lives. Now, I opened the front cover. Do you know when this was written?
I would assume it's old because of the question you've asked.
1999.
Guess the 90s. Based on the cover, too.
So 1999, can you imagine what the title would be now? You know, in our busy lives after the iPhone of 2007 and all that stuff. But what I love about it is it's like, tons of just short little chapters, and it gets at the idea of Sabbath for 24 hours, but it also has small things that you can do. And so if you want to pick up this book, there's some practical things. Like, I'll just reference a few. I'm not going to read them all, but one activity he suggests is just a Sabbath walk. So you take 30 minutes, or don't even put a timer on it. Just take a walk with no timer and act like a kid, basically. If you see a crack in the pavement, you explore it. You see a leaf, oh, that's cool. You see, you know, an animal. You feel the breeze, whatever it is, and you're practicing in a small way the Sabbath for a walk. And that way, when the 24-hour period comes, it's not this huge jolt. You've already kind of practiced. Another one, I thought this one was a crazy idea, but here it is. It's called Happiness for Free. It says, take an hour to visit a favorite store where you particularly enjoy shopping, where many beautiful things you love, you'd like to have if you could afford them, but don't buy any of them. Don't spend a penny. And the idea behind that was just listen to the voices that speak to you, saying things like, buy me, or you need me, take me home. You'd be happy if you had me. Be aware of any struggles or discomforts that arise, and then be aware, this is great, of any spaciousness that may arise as you let each item go, walking away free of the impulse to acquire it, at least for today. What do you notice about your mood, your sense of sufficiency, as you leave the store at the end of this practice? So tons of ideas like that in this book, Sabbath, Wayne Mueller. but just small ways to practice stopping and delighting mm-hmm. in our normal everyday lives.
I like that. I think that's good. One challenge I would give, just as you are practicing this 24-hour, man, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, just put your phone up. Seriously, like mm-hmm. put your phone up. Instagram and Facebook are going to be there when you get back. And really, let's be honest. You are not missing the life of your friends if you don't spend 24 hours on Facebook. You are really just missing a bunch of pointless articles because that's what it's turned into, right? So you are not going to miss your social media. You are not going to miss scrolling through Amazon. You are not going to miss a group chat that is irrelevant for you anyway, all that sort of stuff. Just put it up. Put it up for a little bit. If you can't do all 24 hours, man, do eight. Just put your phone away. Turn the screens off. Limit your screen time on the Sabbath. That will help you a lot more than it will more than you might realize. So that would be just an extra thought in regards to the challenges. Put it up. Put it up.
Yeah, real quickly for me, I don't really have a challenge. Just an encouragement of like, just don't overcomplicate it. Like it's supposed to be life giving, not like draining, absolutely, more draining. Yeah. And it might feel that way at the beginning because, like we said, I mean, it's pretty natural for us now. We're not perfect at it, but it took us – I mean, it took me years to get there. It took everybody probably, if I could speak for everybody here, I don't know. But, like, years to kind of just get to a natural thing of that. So that would be my encouragement is just, like, don't beat yourself up too hard about it. Like, just – I mean, start with little things, whether that's, like, a Sabbath rest from your phone for a day, like, or mm-hmm. social media. Like, you might not be able to take work off for a day, but you can – like, you can not – like, delete your social media apps from your phone for a day. And that kind of goes with fasting too. But I don't know, just don't overcomplicate it. But also as a children's minister here, encourage your kids to join in with you.
Mm-hmm. It's a good call.
They want to have a full and life-giving life as well. And I think you guys as parents out there know when your kids are overwhelmed or stressed out or needing times of rest. And so do that together.
I think that's good. Love that. Let's kind of wrap it up there. We hope that you will Sabbath. It is incredibly life-giving because it's a gift from the creator of the universe. He intended for us before the fall to take this day of rest. And so as Kingdom of God people, we want to live the best that we can in the grace that God has given us. And part of that grace is Sabbath. So take it. Here's what we'll do to kind of wrap up. We're a little bit past the hour mark, so we won't spend super long on this, but want to ask some questions that I think are just going to be fun. They might develop into hot takes if you really want to get it there, but here's a couple of fun questions that I just want to hear you guys answer, okay? So this is just a really fun question for a youth minister to ask. If you had one free punch at any mammal in the world, what mammal do you honestly feel like you could knock out?
Mm. So these are animals included, obviously.
Correct. So any mammal that
are humans off the table?
I would say so. Yeah, I would say so. Humans are off the table.
A little awkward in here.
I could punch Luke out. You've got one free hit. So the animal's just like staring at you in the face. It's going to take the hit. You've got one free punch. What mammal do you think you could knock out?
Wow.
Or want to knock out. I don't know.
I was going to say, like, what could I actually knock out? That's a very short list.
Yeah, and I'm a soccer player, so I might want to kick him instead of punch. But yeah, it's a punch, right? So
a punch, yeah.
Okay, a punch. A punch. Melissa, you got anything?
No, I'm drawing a blank right now. Drawing a blank.
Have you thought about this one?
I have, but I also think about a lot of stupid stuff.
There you go. Let's see. I could not knock something out very big. I know that about myself.
No.
I could more run away from it, perhaps. But golly, I don't know. Sheep?
A sheep. Yeah, that's a good one.
I could probably knock a sheep out.
I think you could knock a sheep out. I think so. They're kind of dumb. So you would think like... Maybe they don't
Come here, sheep.
You know, okay, come on over. Okay, yeah. And then, you know, every sheep follows the other sheep. So
that's right.
You knock one out.
That's right.
Everybody else might go too.
I was thinking of like a goat, just because of how annoying they are. Like annoying sounds. I just cannot sometimes. Like, yeah.
Do you think you could punch out a fully, like a full adult goat? Or
absolutely
would it have to
not.
Be like a baby?
Absolutely. Well, I don't want to, okay. Just put me in between a rock and a hard place there to say I would punch a baby goat. I would never. I'm the children's pastor here.
You wouldn't punch a kid.
No.
Goat.
So anyways, goat. No, I definitely could not probably knock it out, but.
Okay. For me, I'm confident that I could punch out this animal, and I also would like to punch out this animal, house cat.
House cat. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I could punch out a house cat, and I would enjoy it.
So annoying.
I'm just thinking, like, what's the largest mammal that I could hit? And a sheep is pretty defenseless in the head.
Right, yeah.
I don't know.
I think also maybe like a capybara. Like the largest rodent, which I guess rodent is also a mammal.
Yeah.
I could definitely punch out a sloth. I know I could.
Oh, yeah.
Sloth, I don't necessarily want to punch a sloth. Sloths are cool.
I was just going to say, you'd probably be crucified for that if you were a sloth.
Yeah,
there's lots of sloth supporters out there.
For sure. But yeah, so those are some fun things. I'll ask two more questions. Okay, this is my favorite question to ask any teenager when I first meet them. If you could be friends with any cartoon character in the whole world, which cartoon character would you be friends with? I think I may have asked this before, but I want to hear from Melissa as well on this one.
Yeah.
So cartoon character that you would be friends with.
My immediate thought, and I'm going to stick with it because I'm sure there's something better out there, but I don't want to think too long, is like Phineas and Ferb, either Phineas or Ferb.
Okay.
Yeah.
Luke's probably within there. Do you know what Phineas and Ferb is, Josh? Okay.
Dude, Phineas and Ferb is... Dare I
Iconic.
Say, the best
104 days of summer vacation, right?
It is
school
incredible.
Comes long just to end it.
Yeah.
I, for about a year here at the church, I used to like have a mini fridge in my office and would keep all my lunch stuff in there. And I would eat lunch at my desk every day and watch one episode of Phineas and Ferb. And it was incredible.
Sasha's text tone, I made a text, like a text tone. So she got a text. Perry the Platypus would make that sound
every time
she got a text for a while.
My little brother Wade, when he was a kid, he had a Perry the Platypus hat. And because we were bullies, we always knocked it off his head and then said, "Where's Perry?"
Golly.
Good.
Oh, man. That was fun. Okay. So there you go. You've got either Phineas or Ferb.
Yeah. And the more I think about it, I think I'm more of like a Candace person just because she's a rule follower. Her brothers keep messing things up. And it's just, you know, and ultimately she ends up loving them. But she's very much like, I want justice for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I cannot believe they get away with this. Mom, you know.
Mom, sort of Phineas and Ferb were building a title sequence.
There you go. Boom. So Phineas and Ferb. Okay, one more question. This is a fun one. If you could have dinner with any person, fiction or nonfiction, dead or alive, who would you have dinner with?
Dead or alive. So all of
dead
history
or alive.
Is open.
All of history is available.
Alexander the Great.
Fictional character?
Alexander the Great.
Alexander the Great.
Tell me why.
I want to ask how he did it. He conquered the entire known world, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I just feel like he'd be pretty interesting.
The question is... Yeah. Is Alexander the Great fact or fiction?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you said real or fictional, right?
Absolutely. So you could say Phineas or Ferb again.
I am going. I'm just thinking TV shows today. I don't know why. Oh no, I don't know. Now I'm overthinking it. But so my favorite TV show is Bones. Have you guys ever heard of this show?
Yeah.
Okay. Love Bones. So like Temperance Brennan, that would be who I would like to have dinner with. She's so smart. She's a very complicated character. Like people think she's a very cold person, but she's actually very caring and I love her. She's the best. So that's who I'd want to have dinner with.
There you go. I answer this question differently every time I'm asked this question. But the first person that popped into my mind right now would be Mother Teresa. I think that
I could definitely go for that.
I think that'd be a really great dinner.
She's a wonderful woman.
I don't know what we would eat.
I was just going to say, I don't know if that'd be a very big meal.
I think that would be a good one. for me. And of course, you know, Jesus is well, our answer, yes. But also yeah. we're going to spend the rest of our lives dining with Jesus in heaven. So, well,
that's why when I ask that question, I like to ask only alive.
Okay. So only alive.
Only alive. Yeah.
Go ahead. Tell me only alive.
Only alive. Man, there's lots of like authors and preachers or something you could give that sort of answer, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be fun just to have dinner with one of your favorite athletes. So yeah. like Jerry Rice for me.
Yeah.
I technically met him one time. I mean, I didn't meet him. He signed my hat when I was sitting on my grandfather's shoulders at training camp.
Mm. Yeah.
But man, like greatest of all time, wide receiver. Like I would love to have dinner with him. That'd be cool. Super sweet.
Yeah. Melissa, alive?
Alive? Well, I was thinking athletes too, but I don't know. Alive? I would have to think on that one for a little bit. I feel like.
It's a hard question.
Jane Rafferty.
Yeah. You know what? Jim and Jane Rafferty, shout out. Yeah. That is actually who I want to have. I want to have dinner with the whole Rafferty clan. They have three sons and a couple daughters-in-law as well, and a grandson who they are just a who I got to
incredible
have.
Family.
Thanksgiving really with family. Them. No, it's just sincerely. So that is who I'd want to have dinner with, which I will do later today.
There you go.
Want to have dinner with my wife. And that's what I am going to do.
Aww.
He takes the cake.
Yep. All one right. 1 year anniversary dinner coming up, and I'm excited about that. Hey, it's been a good conversation. Hope that you are having a great Monday or whenever you're listening to this, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever day. We are really glad that you've tuned in. Melissa, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Next week is going to be another fun episode as we sit down with Melissa again. And then Jenny Carnes as well. And we're just going to have a fun conversation about Thanksgiving. So you won't want to miss out on that. There are plenty of hot takes in that one. and they're not just mine. So
we all joined in.
So they're all joined in on that one. We hope you'll tune in to that next week. And of course, as always, we hope to see you in person for another part of Becoming Unhurried. Is this the week that your dad is up, Josh?
Yeah. So he'll be getting in later this week. He and my mom, and also my sister and brother-in-law and their four kids. So we're gonna have a full house next Sunday. So come out to hear Mark preach, and then I guess I'll be the week after that. So
yeah,
we'll have
and
two weeks of Moores.
So you get Mark Moore and then Josh Moore.
Yeah, there you go.
After that, we'll put out a poll on Facebook and we'll ask you who you like better.
Oh boy!
No, I'm just kidding. That's not gonna happen. But we are super excited to hear from your dad this Sunday, and then from you the Sunday after that. That's what's coming up, and we hope that you're just excited as we are about it. Have a wonderful week, peace and grace, and we'll see you soon.